We're off to Ōtautahi now to learn about the wild food on offer in Christchurch's Red Zone. Urban forager and food writer Liv Sisson finds all sorts of tasty treats in the city centre. With some of the housing and buildings destroyed in the earthquakes, a rewilding has taken place, providing a range of edible plants. Liv Sisson gathers produce thriving on berms near the Avon River. Tēnā koe, Liv.
Kia ora, thanks for having me.
What led you to the delights of foraging?
When I moved to Christchurch, I realized how close I lived to the red zone, and I just started taking some long walks and looking at the plants that were around and checked out a few books from the library and just started to learn, you know, species by species what I could forage around me, and just really an appreciation of being outside and curiosity, yeah, led me to this hobby.
You have to bear a few things in mind, one of them being, you know, trespassing, access. I think there's also maybe chemical sprays you need to bear in mind. So you have to put some thoughts into this. It's worth the effort.
Yes, yeah. Always be mindful of where you're foraging, and you don't want to go onto private property without permission. So places like the Red Zone are a nice place to kind of get your bearings and start foraging on a small scale and seeing what's around. Yeah.
You live near Christchurch's Red Zone, and many of us outside of the city may have a false image of the Red Zone. We're still thinking of the carnage from the earthquakes. What's it like now?
Right, so the Red Zone is primarily on the east side of the city, and it follows along the Avon Otokoto River out to New Brighton, where the beach is. And it's really quite beautiful, and the name does kind of conjure up images that are a little bit intimidating, the red zone. But now it's very green, a lot of beautiful rewilding spaces, old gardens that are kind of taking on new life, new wildlife. And yeah, it's just a beautiful place to walk and bike and forage, yeah.
Did it take long for the rewilding to start?
I've only been in Christchurch 3 years, so I can kind of only speak to that time frame. But just to give you an example of how quickly, you know, land can kind of be rewilded, there's a section I've been watching for about 18 months that was actually still an old road. And just this morning I walked by it, and it's got beautiful green grass growing, new plants coming through. So it is quite a quick process once it begins.
You sent us a list of some of the edible plants that you go foraging for. It's much more extensive than I thought. So let's talk through some of the edible plants, first of all, and maybe some unusual ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So one I was out picking just before our chat is Oxalis wood sorrel, and it's a wild microgreen. It looks a lot like clover, but the leaves are more heart-shaped, and they've got beautiful flowers that are purple and white and even yellow in some cases. It's got a really beautiful citrusy flavor, so you can put it through salads. You can actually even make sort of a cordial out of it that's got a nice lemony taste to it. So that's one I was looking for this morning. We've also got miner's lettuce, which is a wild, mild, very crunchy microgreen. It's really high in vitamin C, and it goes beautifully in a salad or even kind of juiced into a wild green smoothie if that's something that you enjoy. So yeah, those were two I was out looking for this morning. And then we've also got common stinging nettle, which is a little bit tricky to harvest, but is a great spinach replacement. We've got dock, we've got cleavers, which are sort of kind of more in the weed family, if you will. But they also are really great in a wild greens pesto, or even with dock, you can get the more tender leaves and chop them up, saute them, use them in place of spinach. Yeah, there's so many different species, as you said.
I think watercress and wild fennella are often come across even here in Wellington.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Wild fennel really grows up and down the country, and watercress really pops up in those sort of fresh, freely moving water sources. So with wild fennel, it's very recognizable with its long green fronds. And if you just smell a bit, it's got that beautiful licorice, it's kind of sweet scent. And that's great, again, in a salad or even in a pesto. And then watercress is another great forageable green, and you want to look for it, as I said, in those sort of stream environments where the water is actually constantly moving. It's not stagnant. But yeah, you do have to be a little careful with watercress, as liver fluke can get into the stem. So you always want to remove the stems and Cook it up before you eat it and make sure you're not picking from a contaminated water source. And if you, can't be sure, make sure to cook it up, boil it before consuming.
I understand the red zone actually is beautifully populated by stone fruit trees and even nut trees.
Yes, we have some incredible heritage stone fruit trees throughout the red zone. And I think it was 2 years ago the city council put out an interactive map, so you can actually go onto council's website and check out that map and find your way around the red zone and actually enjoy some of the stone fruit towards the end of summer. And beautiful walnut trees, some chestnuts. There's everything you need to make a great cobbler is out there.
We should mention flowers too. They're often forgotten, but edible or not, flowers are a beautiful thing to have in the home.
Yes, definitely. And in the red zone, since there are a lot of old gardens, there are lots of beautiful flowers that come out, especially in the springtime. And some edible flowers I've been seeing recently are sort of the wild radish flower, wild brassica. We've got lots of broom flowers. We've got calendula. There's lots of dandelions. There's so many different edible flowers that you can pick there. And if nothing else, edible flowers are a beautiful garnish on anything you might be cooking. And there are also lots of things you can make with them. Like if you forage clover flowers, you can make a clover soda. You can put them into shortbread cookies. You can make jelly. There's so many uses for flowers as well.
When you started out, were you kind of a lone wolf going along the berms and foraging? I just wondered if this has caught on and you're finding now that there are others out there with you.
That's a great question. I definitely, it is kind of a solitary activity for me, but I have in the last couple of months definitely found that there's a big interest and lots of people are keen to go out and just learn a bit, and always happy to take people along on my missions with me and just kind of share in the bounty because there is so much out there to learn about and enjoy. But it is a great solitary activity as well. It's a great way to relax and kind of slow down and just enjoy the natural world.
You really love collecting fungi, but this is where you absolutely have to know your mushrooms, don't you? The edible versus what's potentially toxic.
Yes, 100%. I mean, with any foraging, you want to be 100% sure of your ID before you consume anything. But especially with fungi, where we do have some deadly poisonous species that grow here, you do want to be very, very confident in your identification. And it's great to just learn a little bit about the really dangerous species, be aware of them. Don't get too impatient and rush into eating something. Be okay to kind of see it a few times, read about it, research it, see it again, and sort of just enjoy that process of learning. It can take quite a long time between saying, okay, I'm keen to look for a porcini species, let's say, which is a great edible mushroom. It can take, I think it took me maybe a full year between learning about that species and actually seeing it and consuming it. So it can be quite a long dance, if you will, to get through that learning process.
Liv, I mentioned spraying before. I must say I'm a very enthusiastic blackberry forager. Some lovely spots around Wellington, which I'm not prepared to share at the moment. But I do sometimes wonder about chemicals because some of them on main roads. So how can you do your research here, or is it more making sure that you are very careful when you are cleaning the produce when you get it home?
Yeah, well, you've asked the perfect question. I've actually foraged blackberries in Wellington as well. And blackberries are actually a great indicator species because they indicate to you that an area has not been sprayed, because they are very susceptible to any spray. So if you're seeing blackberries in an area, that's a good indication that it's pretty pristine. But you can also contact your council to find out about spraying. And then, as you said, of course, wash anything that you're foraging when you get home. And you know, if an environment doesn't look healthy, then it's probably not. So just using that gut instinct as well is a really good tool.
Hurrah! That's good to know. Hoping for another bumper season this year. I know nettles are really popular with foragers in the UK. You mentioned stinging nettles before. What about here? Are they a popular produce for foragers?
Yeah, so common nettle, which is introduced, is a great forageable ingredient. You do need gloves so you don't get stung. If you do get stung, though, dock and nettle often grow in the same environments. And if you cut away a bit of dock, the sap that comes out of the stem can actually soothe the sting from the stinging nettle. But yes, common nettle is really popular forageable ingredient. It's really nutrient dense and is a great spinach alternative. And it grows like a weed. So it's very easy to find if you are keen to use it. And then we do have a native nettle, which is good to be aware of as well. It's Urtica ferox is the scientific name. And that comes up more in the native bush, especially in gullies and ravines. And it looks quite different to common nettle, and it is quite poisonous. So that's not one to forage, but it is one that's good to be aware of, whether you're foraging or tramping or just spending time outside.
We are, of course, a nation of microclimates, given the way we are. And you've been talking about foraging in the central city in Christchurch, but I think maybe a 30-minute drive away over in Lyttelton, for example, you could well get different species.
Yes, that's a great point. And microclimates are another really handy tool to have in your foraging toolbox. And all they are really is just, a microclimate. If, you think back to when you were a kid, and under the slide at the playground, you might have found, really cool plants because the slide provides a bit of shade and allows the ground to hold a bit more moisture. And so that is even a microclimate on a very small scale. But then on a bigger scale, of course, here in the central city, the topography is very flat. It's very warm. We get a lot of sunshine. But you go over the hill to Lyttelton, there's a lot more topography. You've got that inland waterway, so there's a cool breeze coming off lots of the time. So you get quite different species over there, but also some overlap as well. But yeah, nation of microclimates, there's very huge variety of things to forage based on where you are.
You were like this. Diane just sent us a text to say, driving along Wainui Beach, listening to your guest talking about foraging, had to leap out of the car and pick a bunch of nasturtiums. Gorgeous and very tasty. Just to wrap this up.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
For other people who've got really excited about this, how can people further educate themselves about foraging?
Great question. And just to the texter about the nasturtium, great fun foraged recipe is you can take the nasturtium buds and actually pickle them and use them as you would use capers. I love salty foods, so that's a fun one to make. But yes, to learn more about foraging, I would recommend checking out some books from the library, just researching online. And another great way I've learned is just following different foraging resources on social media. So I just get a little, if I'm scrolling on my phone, at least I'm learning a little bit as I go, and kind of having that constant input of information can kind of, I found, really help you along that journey of learning about a species, kind of having it in your mind's eye, looking for it on your walks, and continuing to learn and just having that constant input. A couple of books I've really loved are The Forager's Treasury by Joanna Knox. Julia's Edible Weeds is a great website. And then if people are keen to learn a bit more from me, you can also check out my page on Instagram, live_moss with 3 S's. And I just share lots of fun videos and posts with just some of my learnings. So yeah, lots of resources out there.
Just before we wrap up, I'll share this with you. Texter says, our family built in Dallington. The house was red zoned, and sadly our dad left after almost 50 years. Our parents had a wonderful garden, and it's a joy to see the apples, pears and plums are being harvested, not only for personal use, but for food banks. They both would have loved to have seen their garden feeding others long after both of them and the house have gone. That's from Nicola. Thank you so much, Nicola. And thank you, Liv Sisson.